You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Today's episode is brought to us by Truebill. Truebill is the new app that saves you money by helping you identify and stop paying for the subscriptions you don't want or need, and can even negotiate better deals on those you want to keep. Happy Tuesday, everybody. This is the post-game podcast from Wolves Pacers on Monday night. The Timberwolves held on to beat the Indiana Pacers by a final of 198. This is the postgame pod. We're going to talk all about it. We're going to do five key takeaways today and then individual studs and duds. That'll be the program. And there's a lot to talk about in this one. First of all, thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen each and every day. Remember, Locked On Wolves is free and available on all platforms. That includes YouTube as well as all of your audio platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, and of course, the all new Odyssey app. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at B Beacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right, Wolves Pacers on Monday. The final was 198. There weren't real, like, it wasn't a super engaging offensive game, but it was a rock solid win for a Timberwolves team that was missing three of their best four defenders. And Karl-Anthony Towns fouled out. He had nine turnovers. There was a lot of adversity to overcome. It felt like the officiating was spotty at both ends of the floor. The Pacers had Chris Duarte ejected. They had technicals from TJ McConnell, from head coach Rick Carlisle. There was a lot going on in this game. It was entertaining. It wasn't offensive fireworks, but it was a lot of fun. And I think we start with what I just mentioned was the lack of the shorthandedness of the Timberwolves, especially when it came to perimeter defenders. We knew Patrick Beverley wasn't going to play. Of course, he's out for at least another week and a half with the adductor strain. And this is the third game he's missed, third full game he's missed. And found out earlier on Monday that Jared Vanderbilt and Jaden McDaniels were both questionable due to flu-like symptoms. Vando was in the initial starting lineup announced by the team, but then was a late scratch and did not play. So three of the Timberwolves' best four perimeter defenders, or three of the best four defenders, period. And the three best defenders that had been in the rotation. Remember, Josh Okogie basically hadn't played other than a couple of minutes over the past almost 3 weeks. The back spasms, then he was just kind of out of the rotation because coming back from the back spasms, being cautious, the team was playing well. And all of a sudden, he's starting. And the other three great defenders, plus defenders, clearly plus defenders on this team, and Vanderbilt, McDaniels, Patrick Beverley, all out for this game. And the Pacers aren't like a really dynamic offensive team, but they're middle of the pack at worst. They've got some guys, you know, Malcolm Brogdon's a 20-point-per-game guy. Obviously, Caris LeVert is still working his way back from injury. He's not the most dynamic player right now. But Domantas Sabonis, certainly. No Miles Turner in this one, of course. And that was notable. And, that was, I guess, the biggest absence for the Pacers. But still, I mean, you got to deal with Malcolm Brogdon, and it would have been nice to have those additional defenders and also rebounding the ball. The Pacers are a solid rebounding team. Again, no Miles Turner definitely plays into that. It impacts what the Pacers were able to do on the glass, or in this case, weren't able to do. Domantas Sabonis was a monster on the glass. He was really the only factor. He had more than half of their team rebounds. The Pacers had 47 rebounds as a team. Domantas Sabonis had 25. So the Timberwolves had to make up for two things. We'll just call it two. Many, many small things. We'll call it two. One, perimeter defense. So my first takeaway is no Vanderbilt, no McDaniels, no Patrick Beverley. How do the Timberwolves overcome being so shorthanded on the defensive end of the floor? Well, in the first half, they didn't do a very good job of it. They actually were pretty bad defensively in the first quarter. They only gave up 26 points, and it was maybe more noticeable that they were so bad defensively because the offense only put up 20 points. And then the second quarter, they gave up 31. So they actually had given up 57 points by halftime to this Pacers team and held them to just 41 points in the entire second half. But the first half defense was almost non-existent for Minnesota. Slow rotations. They barely committed any fouls, which I've harped on the Timberwolves' issues committing fouls. They've struggled to defend without fouling this season. But I also, this was maybe Wednesday's show last week, Tuesday's show, it was middle of the week last week, when I talked about defending without fouling being great, but you'd rather be over-aggressive and commit a foul than give up wide-open layups, dunks, whatever, which is what we've seen Timberwolves teams in the past do, right? I think the way I put it last week was, You know, if you make three aggressive plays at the rim, you might get called for one foul. The refs are going to let contact go on probably the other two. But if you lay off on all three of those, they're going to make all three baskets at the rim, right? Or you draw that out longer, say 10 attempts, they're going to make 9 out of 10 at the rim if you do a bad job contesting. If you contest, you commit a couple fouls here and there, they're not going to make all their free throws anyway. Obviously, there's other, you know, there's a snowball effect there where you get guys that foul out. We've seen that quite a bit with Towns and McDaniels, especially to a lesser extent, Vanderbilt. But at any rate, you'd rather defend, be a little bit over aggressive, make the officials make the foul calls. And they have against the Wolves. The Wolves have been number one in personal fouls per game and free throws, opponent free throws per field goal attempts basically all season. But in this game, the Timberwolves were not fouling early in the game in the first half. They were hardly committing any personal fouls. And that to me was actually a red flag of their lack of aggression. And giving it 57 to the Pacers in just 24 minutes in the first half was not great. But as the game wore on, the Timberwolves became more aggressive. And obviously, we eventually saw Karl-Anthony Towns foul out. I think he only had one. He maybe committed two fouls in the first half. But all of a sudden, the second half, he was a foul machine. We saw, you know, Naz Reid struggle a little bit with it when he came in for Towns. And actually, the Wolves played some bigger lineups with both Naz and Towns together in this game, which was intriguing. But outside of Towns, they mostly did a good job defending without fouling. But early in the game, it was a very clear red flag to me that this team was just not committing fouls, which is seems like a weird thing to say. But that was just kind of a function of them not defending aggressively enough. The second thing you're missing, especially with no Jared Vanderbilt, but also to some extent McDaniels when he plays the three and Pat Bev in general, because he's so aggressive and for his size, he's a good rebounder, was a lack of energy in rebounding. No Vanderbilt meant no energy or the danger of there being no energy and a huge dearth in the rebounding category. I want to get back to rebounding later because that's actually going to fall under a different category overall. But the energy and rebounding together that Vanderbilt brings, the lack of Vanderbilt, where were the Wolves going to get that from? Early in the first half, Jalen Noel actually got rotation minutes for, I believe, the first time this season. The only time he's seen the floor has been in garbage time of wins or losses. And he was very good early in the game. I don't believe he saw the court at all in the second half, but his early stint, he was actually active defensively. And that's obviously Jalen Noel's biggest issue is defense. And he was active. He provided some energy when the rest of the team was not overly energetic early in the game. And then along with that, Josh Okogie, we'll talk more about him later in the show. He had a really, really good game, especially early and then very late in the game, which we'll get to as well. He was very good guarding Malcolm Brogdon, but all over the place, fighting over screens, drawing offensive fouls, in part because he was trying to fight over screens and get through Sabonis screens on the perimeter. And just a really energetic game from Okogie. It's exactly what the Timberwolves needed from him with no Jared Vanderbilt. They even had an exchange on Twitter after the game. Vando tweeted something and Okogie retweeted it and said, "I got your back," or something to that effect. The Timberwolves obviously had this conversation. No Beverly, no Vando. We need energy. Chris Finch, no doubt, went to Josh Okogie and said, "You need to give us this energy tonight. This is your game." Sure enough, Josh Okogie played 33 minutes, only attempted 4 shots in this game because his role was not to shoot the ball. His role was to provide energy, to rebound as best he could. And he didn't get that many rebounds, but he impacted the Timberwolves rebounding as a team, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and provided the energy the Wolves needed. And that was huge. I have 3 more takeaways I want to get to. We're going to do that next. And then we'll close with individual studs and duds from Wolves Pacers on Monday. First, though, let's talk about the title sponsors of today's show. And that, of course, is our friends at Truebill. Do you know why free trials renew without your consent? It's a business scam out to get you. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply might have forgotten about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. $720 a year with Truebill. Because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel, Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to. Truebill has over 2 million users and has helped them save over $100 million. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Okay, 3 more takeaways from Wolves Pacers. The third one was the Timberwolves really struggled when the Pacers went to a zone. They did this in both halves. I think it was kind of late first, early second quarter, maybe, and then early fourth quarter. And Minnesota just kind of panicked, or maybe it was late third quarter. They just kind of panicked. And this happens, and that's the whole reason why NBA teams will flip into a zone for a few possessions to catch teams off guard, to steal a possession or two where the team's just kind of flummoxed, throws the ball out of bounds, takes a bad shot, whatever. But the Pacers kind of kept, there were multiple possessions in a row where the Wolves just kind of didn't know what to do. And it was weird because Towns ended up with the ball in the middle of the zone, basically at the nail right in the center of the court, and was wide open. And in the first half, we saw Towns kind of, he kind of gets, it's the same thing that happens when he gets a small on him in the post or when the double first comes. He almost gets kind of jittery and he either overpasses or he just kind of flails around and sometimes he gets offensive fouls. In this case, there was nobody within an arm's length of him. And he just kind of like would immediately turn and kick the ball back out to the perimeter and the Wolves would end up getting not a great shot. They had a couple of turnovers, I believe, and the Pacers are playing zone early. In the second half, they handled it a little bit differently and Cat was a little bit more, he scored once. I think he took a dribble and then kind of like a 10-foot floater. Then there was another one where he, for whatever reason, faded from about 15, 16 feet and missed the shot. But I mean, you take a Cat 15-footer, I mean, every time down the floor, he's going to make 70% of those if he's as open as he was. And I don't know why he wasn't doing that or taking a dribble, taking contact in the paint, getting to the line, or taking a dribble, sucking in the low defenders and kicking to the corners for three-pointers. It's one of those things where you're going to see it, you know, maybe every other game for a handful of possessions, but the Timberwolves need to have a better response for when teams flip into a zone. And I'm not saying they haven't coached that. It's one of those things where the players aren't expecting it, you know, but after it happens once down the floor, the Timberwolves have to have an answer for that. And if Towns is in the game and you're going to let him catch, I mean, how often do the Timberwolves try and scheme an open catch for Towns where teams aren't able to double it? And that's the whole reason you put him in the mid post or at the elbow, is because you can't really double there very effectively, especially at the elbow. And if he's catching essentially at the free throw line with nobody around him, he should just shoot the ball or take a dribble and shoot or take a dribble and suck the defense in and pass. And for whatever reason, it just completely like flummoxed him and the Timberwolves as a whole. So that's something they'll need to keep working on. And he just needs to not panic. I don't know if he himself had any turn. He had a ton of turnovers in this game. I'm not sure he committed any in that moment, but there were like at least three or four possessions where he just immediately kind of got the pass and turned and kicked it to the other wing. And there was nobody around him. So something that the Timberwolves need to continue to work on. There have been other teams that have played zone with solid effectiveness against the Timberwolves, and they've got to figure out what to do in those instances. My fourth takeaway, I mentioned rebounding earlier. If you look at the line or you're looking at like the ESPN scroll on the bottom of the screen and you see that Domantas Sabonis has a triple-double, 16, 25 rebounds and 10 assists, you must just assume the Timberwolves were murdered on the glass. Not so. They were a net zero. Each team had 47 total rebounds. Each team had 8 offensive rebounds in this game. Domantas Sabonis just so happened to have 25 of them himself. He had more than a quarter of the rebounds in this entire game, both teams combined, and more than half of his own team's rebound. Nobody else on the Pacers had more than 6 rebounds. They only had three other players with 4 or more rebounds in this game besides Sabonis. The Timberwolves didn't have a single player log 10 rebounds, but they still matched the Pacers board for board in this game. Why was that? The Timberwolves essentially rebounded all 5 for the entire game. This wasn't a monster Towns rebound game. We haven't seen very many of those this year. This wasn't, this wasn't a Jared Vanderbilt 15 rebound game like we saw a few nights ago. Jared Vanderbilt didn't even play. So how did the Wolves respond to Novando? How did they respond to having to play a little bit smaller in general? They just rebounded all 5. They had 3 players in the starting lineup with 8 or more rebounds and led the team with 9 rebounds. This is the Anthony Edwards we need to see. Karl-Anthony Towns, 8 rebounds in 32 minutes. Of course, he fouled out. He probably would have had the double-double had he not fouled out. We'll talk more about that in a minute. D'Angelo Russell, 8 rebounds as well. So you had D'Lo, Cat, and Ant, each with 8 or more rebounds. That's your big 3 showing you how it's done coming through when the Timberwolves were shorthanded in the front court and grabbing a bunch of rebounds in this game. Malik Beasley had 7 rebounds in 29 minutes off the bench. I haven't looked. Guarantee you that's a season high. It's got to be close to a Timberwolves high for Malik Beasley's Timberwolves career. Certainly in a game when he played 30 or less minutes. Beasley's not a big-time rebounder. 7 rebounds in 29 minutes. And there were a couple of those that were athletic heads-up plays. His shot wasn't falling in this game, but he redeemed himself on the glass and then with a clutch 3 late in the game as well. So he deserves a shout-out. Leandro Balmaro, 5 rebounds in 15 minutes. He again was the first guy off the bench for the Wolves, or came in at the first sub for Minnesota in the first quarter. Only played 15 minutes, but had 5 boards. They rebounded all 5. The Timberwolves did. They had to in this game, and they did that. They matched the Pacers. Each team had 47 rebounds. They overcame a monster 25 rebound game from Sabonis. So that was definitely a positive development for Minnesota. My fifth takeaway is that the late game offense, the Wolves were up, it was like 7-9 points, kind of hovering in that 7-9 point range with 5 minutes left. They should have put their foot on the neck of the Pacers, put the game away, but they wasted like 3 consecutive possessions with ant isolations. And I'm not suggesting that an ant isolation is always a wasted possession, but it is when the other team knows exactly what you're doing and you still can't get a good shot off. Even if it is, like, there's really no reason that Ant should be in an isolation situation and not be able to get a good shot off, because, he should be able to get a shot off from anywhere. And we saw that when he got hot in this game. His step back three is not a bad shot. That's why I didn't even hate it the other night. I think it was the end of regulation against the Sixers when he shot an open, you know, basically 28, 29 footer. That's not awful. He's got pretty good, I mean, he's got great range from that. You know, he's probably 34% from that distance. But, it doesn't work in late game situations all the time when other teams are expecting it. And the Timberwolves offense just went completely stagnant. And at one point you saw, I think it was when it got down to a one possession game with just over 2 minutes left, Timberwolves didn't call a timeout because they couldn't afford to at that point. But Finch, like, basically called D'Lo over as the Timberwolves were getting ready to bring the ball back up the court, was like, hey, we need to actually get something going here. That's when D'Lo kind of took control, took the reins of the offense. They ran a couple of different pick and roll plays. They ran D'Lo off some screens. He hit a layup in the paint. There was the possession with under a minute to play. There's like 30 seconds left. Like 50 seconds left. Missed shot. D'Lo gets the offensive rebound, throws it to the opposite corner. Malik Beasley hits the massive three to put Minnesota up 3. They didn't look back from that point forward. A lot of that's just D'Lo, but the Timberwolves actually ran offense. This was after Towns had fouled out and Ant was trying to just take the game over. And in reality, if you just keep moving the ball, Malik Beasley can make open shots. You have to trust that he's going to hit open shots. Anthony Edwards can hit open shots if he gets them within the flow of the offense. There's a time and a place for ISO ball. It's not multiple times down the court when you're clinging to a 2-possession, 3-possession lead in the final 5 minutes. And thankfully, the Wolves kind of pulled out of it before it became a complete tailspin. And, you know, the Pacers they're a pretty good defensive team. So, at that point, it was just the right thing to do to actually run real offense. And the Timberwolves did that a bit down the stretch. And that was refreshing to see. This is back-to-back games that D'Angelo Russell has, and really three out of the last four, I guess, if you include the Miami game, has kind of had these moments where it's like, okay, we know why he's called, you know, we know why the ice in his veins thing is a thing, right? We know why D'Angelo Russell is that guy, because he can perform in those situations. He likes to perform in those situations. And he's playing so much better now than he was earlier this season. And it's been super evident in the fourth quarter, 3 of the last 4 games. And all those are games that the Timberwolves ended up winning. So another big fourth quarter from D'Lo. Good job by the Wolves to avoid kind of falling into just completely iso ball down the stretch and be able to put enough points on the board in the final couple of minutes to pull away a little bit. I guess they won by one possession, but to go up by 4 with, you know, 30 seconds left to basically put this thing away. I want to close with individual studs and duds. We'll take a peek ahead at the rest of the week. We're gonna do all that next. First though, let's talk about betonline.ag. BetOnline has you covered all season. More props, odds, and lines than ever before as football season continues the march to the playoffs. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the sports action this season. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus from basketball to football, NHL to boxing and UFC, right down to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, let's talk individual studs and duds. So it'd be easy to just say the big three in this one. I mean, Cat had 32 points. It's, you know, he had a good game except for fouling out, but I'm going to go a little bit of a different route. And I guess I'll do these. I don't always do these in any particular order, but I'm going to go in order in this one. I thought D'Angelo Russell was the best player in the court in this game. Bar none, both teams, best player in the court. He was really good defensively. I haven't even really talked about that. I talked about Josh Okogie, the job he did on Malcolm Brogdon. D'Angelo Russell was really good defensively in this game. I mean, don't look now, but he has been an adequate defender this season. I would even venture to say average defender in terms of point of attack defense, by and large. There have been a couple of blips on the radar, but now the norm, those are the exceptions. The norm, at this point, we're 21 games in. I'm expecting him to be an average defender from this point forward because he's shown us that he can be. I've talked about this plenty. His size, his anticipation, his basketball IQ, he can be a decent defender. It's just the subpar lateral quickness, the very average athleticism. I get that. Average relative to NBA players, of course, athleticism. But he could be a solid defender. It's effort combined with size, intelligence. He could do all those things. His line in this game, very good. 21 points on 7 of 17 shooting, 3 of 9 outside the arc. Perfect 4 of 4 at the line. 11 assists, so double-double, 21 and 11, plus 8 rebounds and a steal. Only one turnover. 11 assists to one turnover. For D'Angelo Russell, he had a plus 10 in the plus-minus column and a two-point win, which was the second best mark on the Timberwolves. This is best case D'Angelo Russell. 21, 11, and 8. Just 40-ish, 40, what, 43, 44% from the field. 3 of 9 outside the arc. Only one turnover. Solid defense. This is all-star D'Angelo Russell. This version of D'Angelo Russell is better than the Brooklyn Nets version of D'Angelo Russell. And it's certainly better than anything we've seen in a Timberwolves uniform. Solid play down the stretch. He's the one with his finger on the pulse of the game, slowing it down just enough to get into an actual offense, but not into an isolation crawl, shooting the big shot when he needs to, facilitating for teammates when he needs to. This is, I hesitate to say vintage D'Angelo Russell, because I think this is a new version of D'Angelo Russell. And I probably should open the show with this because I don't want it to get lost in the, Cat's hot and cold game we'll talk about in a minute, and Ant's big, late game surge. I get all that. D'Lo needs credit when credit is due. I have ripped him plenty on this show. D'Angelo Russell was very, very good in this game. Anthony Edwards gets a stud as well, mostly because of that late game surge. He shot the ball not quite as well as D'Lo, 21 points on 7 of 19, just 2 of 7 outside the arc, but he did hit one big three late in the game. 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals for Ant, and 0 turnovers in 39 minutes. If you can get Ant and D'Angelo Russell to combine for 16 assists and 1 turnover, you're going to win some games. Doesn't matter that they each shot, they both had pretty pedestrian shooting nights in terms of percentage and also outside the arc. They combined to shoot just 5 for 16 outside the arc. But if you have 16 assists, 1 turnover, and you still score 42 combined points, you can live with that. So he gets a stud as well. So Ant and D'Lo are my top two studs. D'Lo number one, Ant number two. I'll talk about Cat here because I don't want to give Cat a dud in this game, but I could. He was just so good up until the turnover issues. The offensive fouls, the fouling out, it's so frustrating. He still had 32 points on 13 to 22, but at one point he was like 10 to 13 from the field, and then things just kind of went downhill. He still had 32 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, and shot 13 to 22, but he only shot 1 of 4 outside the arc. He was just 5 of 8 at the free throw line, so a subpar shooting night at the line for him. Didn't shoot enough threes. He had 9 turnovers in 32 minutes. You cannot have 9 turnovers in 32 minutes if you're going to have 2 assists and foul out of the game. And I didn't go back and look, but at least 2 of his fouls were offensive fouls. Though, by the way, the one he fouled out on was bogus. I understand his elbow hit Domantas Sabonis, but you're allowed to use your elbows when you're shooting the ball. It was incidental contact. Should not have been a foul on Karl-Anthony Towns. Should have been a foul on Domantas Sabonis. So I'll say that. And also, like, the ticky-tack ones, like, even though Jim Peterson said this on Bally Sports North, I think it was his fourth foul, maybe, when it was, I forget who was actually guarding him. I think it might have been, I think it was the backup center. I don't think it was Sabonis at the time, but Towns was kind of standing near the high post and just kind of, he wasn't even really hooking him. He was just kind of holding his hand and put it behind him. By the letter of the law, yes, that's a foul. It's such a ticky-tack call, and I mean, if you ever see that called on, I don't know, insert big man here, Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic. I mean, tell me Nikola Jokic doesn't do that every time down the court. It's just, we're to the point now, and I've said this before, Towns deserves some, he deserves to be called out for some of this because it's the complaining to the officials that encourages them to keep calling this stuff. I get that. But we've gone too far. I mean, like, are we really calling that on Karl Anthony Towns? It's just, it's such a lame distortion of the rules. I mean, is that really what we're calling fouls? By the letter of the law, sure. But by the letter of the law, you could call a foul in almost every time down the court if that's what we're calling. That is ridiculous. His last call was also ridiculous. It was not an offensive foul. Still, Towns is responsible for the 9 turnovers, and I get that the two of them are the ones I'm saying shouldn't have been called. But he's still playing a little bit out of control. He is not playing the way, or in this game specifically. He's been very good overall lately, of course. But he continues to have these, you know, more turnovers than rebounds is not a winning strategy for Karl Anthony Towns. That's not going to get him an All-Star berth. It's not going to get him an All-NBA berth if he's worried about individual accolades. And long-term, you know, in the long run, that's not a winning recipe for the team either. So Cat doesn't get a stud or a dud in this game, but I wanted to say my piece on him. So my third and final stud, quickly, Josh Okogie, only had 2 points, 4 assists, shot 1 of 4 in 33 minutes. Not a sexy line by any means, but 2 steals, 2 blocks, no turnovers for Josh. When he's going well, he doesn't turn the ball over. And by that, I mean, he barely touches it offensively. And when he does, it's a swing, right? He catches it and he swings it. He catches it, he passes, he cuts. He's getting it at the rim, whatever. 4 assists, no turnovers for Josh, 2 steals, 2 blocks, an awesome job on Brogdon. I should have really just spent the first half of the show just talking about Okogie and D'Angelo Russell defensively, because together they were very good. And I don't know that a week ago I would have ever thought I would have said that, given Okogie was out of the rotation and Russell was having his moments defensively, or 2 weeks ago maybe. Really good game from Josh Okogie. And this is the version of Josh where you say, okay, he's a rotation guy on a playoff team, or a guy that can step up and start when you're missing 2 guys due to illness. That's what we saw from Josh Okogie in this game. Duds, I'm going to split the duds because I don't know that anybody really played poorly in this game, but I'm just going to do it. Torian Prince started, only played 23 minutes. He had no points and 0-4 shooting, missed all 3 of his 3-point attempts. A couple of his 4 shots were kind of crazy, like off balance, weird attempts early in the game. He only had 4 rebounds in 23 minutes. You need a little bit more out of him if he's going to start at the 4 for you. Not a great game, not a terrible game. Malik Beasley was going to be the only dud until he hit that big 3 late. But between the 7 rebounds and the big 3-pointer in the corner to break the tie with under a minute to play, this is a decent game for Malik Beasley. He was 2 of 7 from the field. All 7 of his field goal attempts were 3-pointers. So we need to see more out of Malik Beasley moving forward. And I've said this probably half the games the Timberwolves have played this year. But generally speaking, this is the sort of game that you don't expect out of him. You think he's an all or nothing. He's going to score 25 points in 24 minutes or something, or he's going to do nothing. He was somewhere in the middle in this game. 9 points, 7 rebounds in 29 minutes, hits a big 3. That's the performance you need if you're going to be a playoff team out of guys like Malik Beasley. So a solid performance from him. He gets half of a dud because he really, outside of rebounding, didn't do much until the final minute of the game. That's where we're at. Quickly, Leandro Balmaro, again, I mentioned him earlier. He was a solid, decent in terms of being part of the rotation of this game, effectively running back up point guard for the team. No points, but 5 rebounds in 15 minutes and was really good defensively, really aggressive, which was good to see. And also Naz Reid gets a shout out, 13 points, 2 rebounds only in 23 minutes, but he shot 5 of 7, hit a 3-pointer in the second half, and looked at one point like he had potentially a serious injury, but he came back like 2 minutes later. So that was good to see. And he was a team high. I know there's plenty of noise here, but he was a plus 20 in 23 minutes. And he did share the court with Kat at times. They played together for some stretches in both the first and second half. Kat was actually a team worst minus 13 in 32 minutes. Again, saying it, I know that there's a lot that goes, or there's plenty of factors that play into individual plus minus, but I just thought it was interesting, so I'm just putting it out there. Naz was a plus 20 in 23 minutes. Cat was a minus 13 in 32. All right. Fun game. And next, the Timberwolves, they head right back out on the road after the 1-game homestand. They take on the Washington Wizards, the somewhat surprising Washington Wizards, on Wednesday in our nation's capital, and then the Brooklyn Nets on Friday. So two very difficult road games against Eastern Conference Wednesday and Friday. We'll, of course, have a show still on Wednesday. We'll preview Wolves Wizards and talk about a couple of other things related to the season thus far. And then we'll do post-game podcasts after the Wizards and Nets games, as we always do here later this week. Thank you for listening to the show. Make sure that you're following and subscribed to the podcast wherever you listen. First of all, thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen each and every day. And remember, the show's available on all platforms, including YouTube. And you can also follow on Apple, Google, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. You can also follow on Twitter at LockedOnTWolves and at BBeacon. And definitely appreciate that. And if you do follow on any of those platforms, please, you know, like, review, all that good stuff. Definitely appreciate it. And I greatly appreciate the listenership. That's all I have for today. Thanks for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.